residents of Toledo and Northwest Ohio got the go-ahead to resume drinking city water yesterday. Now, since Saturday, more than 400,000 residents of the area had been warned not to consume or use the water after health officials determined unsafe levels of a potentially deadly bacteria. It was likely created by an algae bloom in Maumee Bay on the west end of Lake Erie, and it can cause serious liver and nerve damage. Scientists say the algae blooms, which have become more common in Lake Erie and elsewhere, are mainly triggered when phosphorus used by farmers and homeowners runs off into lakes and by leaking septic systems. Karen Schaefer is an independent public radio journalist based in Ohio who's been covering algae blooms in Lake Erie for some years now. Welcome to Current State, Karen.
Well, thank you, Mark. It's a pleasure to be here.
We know the ban on drinking water has been lifted, but what's the latest on the situation in Toledo?
Well, what they're doing in Toledo now is asking homeowners, hospitals, other businesses to, over a period of time, if they haven't been using their water, to gradually flush out their systems. In other words, run the water from all the taps in a house or wherever for about 15 minutes to clear any lingering traces of this algae toxin that might still be in the water.
Hmm. This morning's Detroit Free Press quotes Don Scavia. Mr. Scavia is an aquatic ecologist at the University of Michigan, and I'll quote from what Mr. Scavia told the Free Press. Quote, typically these blooms reach maximum size in late August or early September. We may be looking at the beginning of the season, unquote. Are you hearing similar remarks or less worrisome remarks? Could the algae blooms return?
Well, it is very, very early in the season for this bloom to have had this kind of an impact. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration has for some years now been predicting, or at least attempting to predict, the location and density of algae blooms in Lake Erie. And as you say, it's all part of phosphorus runoff from the land, mostly in Lake Erie in the Western Basin. It's farm pollution from farm fields along the Maumee River, which empties into Lake Erie at Toledo. And that's where the blooms tend to form. So what they're trying to do, of course, is reduce these things. But the problem is, some years there's just so much rain starting in March and ending in June, sometimes in July, that even more phosphorus pours into the system. This was a rainy year. This year, the prediction for this year's bloom was only supposed to be kind of in the 5 to 6 range on a scale of 10, 10 being the year in like 2011, when we saw most of the western basin of the lake covered in algae so thick that it was slowing down boats. So, yeah, there's concern. It's early in the season for this to happen. The bloom has grown dramatically over the last few weeks. And, you know, forecasts may have to be revised, let's put it that way.
Karen Schaefer is our guest on Current State. Karen's a journalist based in Ohio who's been covering algae blooms in Lake Erie for some years now, and we're talking about the most recent that's impacted the city of Toledo. Give us just a little bit of history of these algae blooms in Lake Erie. When did these first start happening?
Well, algae blooms, algae is native to Lake Erie, all kinds of algae. And there have been algae blooms in Lake Erie back in the 1960s and 70s. Some people may remember or may have heard about Lake Erie being declared a dead lake. It wasn't dead, but it was certainly sick. But back in the 60s and 70s, that was a different kind of algae. It was a nuisance algae. It didn't emit these toxins, which can cause damage to liver, skin, gastrointestinal systems. Mm. And so, you know, they reduced the phosphorus from wastewater treatment plants. They took it out of detergents, and they thought they fixed the problem. The money to monitor the lake to see what was going on kind of dried up, got siphoned off to other projects. So by the mid-80s, there wasn't much looking around to see what was happening. And then about 1995, scientists discovered that there were new dead zones in Lake Erie. And dead zones form kind of like the Gulf of Mexico dead zone when there's too much nutrient feeding algae blooms. Massive amount of algae forms, dies naturally, sinks to the bottom of the lake and begins to decay, and then it uses up all the oxygen, creating a dead zone. Well, they started looking, and a few years later, they realized that there was a new kind of algae in Lake Erie, a toxic blue-green algae called Microcystis. And this particular kind of algae emits a toxin, Microcystin, which, as I say, is a liver toxin and can cause some other problems. It can be deadly in pets. And in high enough concentrations, it can kill people, too. Toledo was really lucky. They escaped.
It's interesting, though, Karen, because apparently fertilizer use has gone down in the Great Lakes Basin in recent years, but apparently that's not been enough. What efforts are underway to curtail the causes of these algae blooms?
Well, there's a whole bunch of efforts. You know, you're right, fertilizer use, especially along the Maumee River, has dropped dramatically in the last 10 years, partly because fertilizer is so expensive and farmers don't want to use any more than they have to. But it's a very agricultural area. It's very concentrated. And one thing that's changed, of course, is that we're having more frequent and much heavier rainstorms. And we're having, not like last winter, of course, but we're having milder winters. So there's just a lot more water in the basin, which is pulling the stuff in. What a whole bunch of people have been working on is trying to get farmers to do what's called precision nutrient management, which means mapping their fields, doing soil tests, determining where they need fertilizer and where they don't. And then as they go over the field or their farm producers go over the field and fertilize, they can put, you know, 5 pounds in this part, 20 pounds in this part, none over here.
And that's interesting because that is specifically related to conversations we've had about the use of drones in agriculture. Is that apparently one of their selling points, apparently, according to a guest or two that we've had on the program, is that that is exactly what drones in agriculture do.
Well, that's an interesting concept. I'm not sure how drones would do soil tests. But certainly satellite photographs or photographs taken from drones could, during the growing season, show where a farmer's crop isn't doing so well. And that could also be another piece of information about how much fertilizer needs to be there. Another concern is that farmers, you know, it's been wetter. It's hard for farmers to get into the fields early in the year. And when they do, they've got to plow, plant, and move on. It's not a good time to put down fertilizer. So they've been tending to put it on in the fall or even in the winter, and they're broadcasting it. So rain comes right into the water. A new requirement or request to farmers is to get that fertilizer under the ground. And these are areas where we have what's called no-till agriculture, where crops are planted basically into the residue of last year's crop. These are all great initiatives, and there's a new tri-state partnership that includes Michigan and Indiana and Ohio that would, if funded by the USDA, provide about $1 billion over a period of several years for new conservation projects to help farmers do some of these things. But, of course, the funding has to be approved first. And then, you know, there's just lots of education. Ohio just passed a law that will, in 2017 at least, require anybody who spreads fertilizer on their fields to be certified and to kind of get the idea of using the right amount of fertilizer at the right rate, at the right time, in the right place.
You've been reporting on this story over the weekend in Toledo. What were the reactions from the residents that you had a chance to speak with?
Well, an awful lot of folks were frustrated, and some of them were even frantic. You know, when you suddenly lose your water supply, I mean, what's more basic than water, right?
Right.
A lot of people I talked to, I was out there Sunday and at a water distribution center, and a lot of the people I talked to, you know, I said, hey, the water ban's over. You know, you don't need this water now. And they were saying, well, I don't know. I don't trust it. And, you know, when your trust is taken away, that's really hard.
Yeah. Is there any anger or finger pointing going on or what?
Well, that's the interesting thing. You know, Toledo's at the kind of ground zero of this algae problem, and yet very few people I talked to knew what the source of the algae was. very few people understood that it was farming that's the primary culprit in this case. And so, you know, the few who did know didn't really blame farmers. They kind of blamed agribusiness and the competition that is driving even smaller farmers to, you know, do more, grow more. You know, I think a lot of people were blaming our federal government for not paying more attention to this issue sooner. And that's not just local residents, that's public officials all the way up the line.
Could algae blooms develop on any of the other Great Lakes or other inland lakes before the summer is through?
Well, yes, they could. There are nuisance algae blooms all through Lake Ontario. They're not harmful. They're not toxic. There are toxic blue-green algae blooms in parts of Lake Michigan, by Traverse City, for example, in some of the shallower nearshore waters, bays. Generally speaking, the deeper lakes and the colder lakes are not as likely to develop them, but, you know, as the climate changes, that could happen. And, yes, they are spread throughout all 50 states in inland lakes, smaller water bodies, and are a growing problem in places like reservoirs for city drinking water.
Yes, I understand one of the reasons Lake Erie has been particularly affected here is because of the shallowness of the lake. Average depth, I want to say 62 feet or something like that.
Well, Lake Western Basin of Lake Erie, where these blooms form, the average depth is really even shallower. It's about 30 feet. And that's, you know, it's the fish hatchery of Lake Erie. I mean, Lake Erie produces more fish than all the other Great Lakes combined. But it's also, of course, the place where algae blooms grow. And it's a problem that really has to be solved if we're going to keep our drinking water safe.
Karen, as somebody who's covered this for quite some time now, what are you keeping your eye on right now as a reporter?
Really, what I'm looking most to do is talk to more farmers. You know, some farmers have been reluctant to adopt changes, partly because farmers kind of move a little slowly on some of these issues, but also partly because there's quite a lot of cost involved. You know, to have your soil tested and use GPS satellite stuff, I mean, that doesn't come for free.
Mm-hmm.
And farmers have so many other challenges to deal with. So I'm wanting to track and see how farmers are responding, especially after this incident in Toledo, to, you know, maybe I should do some more, or maybe I should look at this. And as more funding becomes available for them, see if they're really taking up the challenge to do this voluntarily rather than have state or federal government come down and regulate them.
Karen Schaefer is an independent public radio journalist based in Ohio. She's been covering algae blooms in Lake Erie for some years now, and she's been reporting from Toledo on the situation there here just in the past few days. Karen, many thanks.
Mark, my pleasure.